Hello and welcome to the Primary Care Respiratory Society podcast series. I'm Catherine Hickman, Executive Chair of PCRS. Each podcast you will hear insightful topics, interviews, experiences and conversations around a plethora of respiratory themes, as well as actionable tips and strategies for you to use in your day-to-day practices. Thank you for joining us and we hope you enjoy this podcast.
Hello and welcome to this PCRS podcast. I'm Fiona Mosgrove. I'm a GP with a special interest in respiratory medicine, working in Aberdeen in the northeast of Scotland. It's a tremendous pleasure to be joined today by two colleagues who are going to help me learn a little bit about lung health, specifically in women. I think many of us working in primary care and respiratory medicine recognise that this is a really important area and perhaps some knowledge gaps for many of us there. Today, I will be joined by Professor Mona Baffadel, who is the Director for the King's Centre for Lung Health and Chair of Respiratory Medicine at King's College. And Chris Musuku, who is a research nurse and first-year PhD candidate funded by Asthma and Lung UK with an interest in menopause and obstructive lung disease. Mona, Chris, thank you very much for joining us. It's an absolute pleasure.
Nice to see you, Fiona.
Thank you so much for having me. Lovely to meet you.
So I wondered if I might just start by asking a little bit about thinking about epidemiology in lung health and thinking about women, first of all, from that kind of early point when we think about lung health. Chris, can I come to you with that to give us a general sense of what's important there and what do we see in epidemiology thinking specifically about women in lung health?
So looking at epidemiological evidence of lung health and women, what we find is that women suffer more in severity, in incidence and prevalence of particularly asthma and COPD I'm talking about. What we see specifically in asthma is that boys tend to have worse asthma before puberty, but then after that, women actually have worse disease severity, as I said, and prevalence, but also in terms of mortality as well. So after puberty, there seems to be that sort of transition that happens. And then going forward, sort of at menopause, which is another huge transitional period for women in terms of hormones, what we find as well there that there are differences with incidence and prevalence and severity, with mixed results, some reporting that asthma gets worse, some reporting that it gets better, but there's so many other factors as well to consider there, sort of like socioeconomic factors, but definitely hormones play a huge part in that.
So that's really interesting. And already even at that kind of early stage, we can see that in lung disease and in asthma, there's a huge role for gender there. And do we know that it's driven by hormones? How much do we know about that side of things? And I think particularly interesting is the bit about sort of boys pre-puberty and then women being worse after. Are we clear that that is hormones or what's happening there, do we think?
So if I step in here, maybe, and Chris can add into that. I mean, it's really important to just imagine that we're only starting to tease out these differences because we are interested in what the gender differences are. However, when we look at, the clinical trials and the big longitudinal data sets, it's not often that gender difference is even looked at as a start. So and so you have to ask yourself, well, are we even measuring hormone levels or asking the question in terms of someone's where they are in terms of reference to their puberty stages or their menopausal stages? It's not a routine question for clinical trial purposes in when we're looking at lung health. And it's certainly not a common question that's asked in clinical practice either. Particularly from secondary care, of course, in primary care, you have a whole wealth of knowledge already about the lifetime of the patient in front of you. So I think we're starting to see that these sex differences are important to look at as a first step. In answer to your question, Fiona, do we know if it's definitely hormone? Well, I think it's something that we're there that has to be explored about in more detail.
Yeah, and just to add on to that, you know, what I was going to say was that we're sort of really in the stages of characterizing what exactly is happening with women and how are they different to men. both in research, but also, you know, we haven't even started asking those questions clinically. So in terms of treatment, it's very difficult to even come up with those answers because we're not even assessing them from that point of view. So we're still in the characterization stage.
Okay, so a really interesting area that we're almost just right at the beginning of in terms of making it a priority and looking at it to study it and ask those questions. When you were both speaking there, I was thinking about sort of asthma and COPD and these big disease labels and the way that we're tending to get a bit more specific and look at sort of traits and phenotypes. And I guess this is probably an unanswered question, but do we know whether there are phenotypes of certain lung diseases that are more common in women? Has that been looked at?
Well, I mean, I would hypothesize that there probably is a endotype of lung diseases that is associated with hormones and sex differences. We do know, for example, that certainly in clinical trials, there are always more men with COPD. However, we recognize that there are this is a lag period based on, you know, the effect of smoking incidence and gender differences. But we are now seeing that, you know, there are more men who are developing, more women, sorry, who are being diagnosed with COPD. We've recently heard that lung cancer rates are being overtaken in women more than in men. And so there are probably some specific endotypes of diseases that are related to this. We also see there are a lot more potentially IPF, so interstitial lung disease, in men than there are women. So these are just, if you step back and look, you kind of have to then ask the question, well, what is that sex difference and how does it play a role? Chris is only in her first year, so hopefully we'll have a few more answers in the next couple of years. But I do think the community, primary care community, the secondary care community and the research community are starting to think about this seriously.
Absolutely. That leads me on quite nicely to my next question, which is when we're thinking about, you know, many of our listeners will be reviewing asthma patients either routinely or, you know, post-exacerbation after they've come out of hospital. Are there things specifically in women, thinking about specifically in asthma, that we should be specifically checking or asking with women in terms of things like menopause status, contraception, these kind of things that might have a bearing on how we treat them? Chris, shall I come to you first?
So I think, like I said earlier, we're still in the characterization stage of what exactly is going on. But I think what would be really important would be to ask these questions, because what we do know is that there is in asthma PMA, which basically is about postmenstrual asthma. So it's when asthma gets worse during the menstrual cycle. And what's been noted in research is that women actually have worse asthma when they have a peak in their estrogen release. So I think what would be interesting to do is that to ask these questions, to note them down, not only for the patient themselves to be able to go away and note, you know, when exactly the symptoms are getting worse and better, but also for us to take note of that, because that can also be information that could be studied later on when we actually understand a bit more about what's going on.
Interesting. Okay. And I wonder if, you know, I guess my experience of asking people things at reviews is that sometimes they don't think about things until you do ask and you say, actually, have you noticed any changes with your hormone cycle? And then people start to think about it a bit more and say that actually, I hadn't thought about it if it was that before. But now that you've mentioned it, when I've gone away and you know, been thinking about it, it does seem to get worse. So I think that's probably quite important for our listeners, is just to be aware that sometimes, you know, it's something to ask, particularly, I suppose, if you've got patients who are struggling with their asthma control, you know, that may be a trigger that they wouldn't necessarily always identify. Mona, did you have anything to bring in there at all?
Yeah, I mean, it's right that we see that the menstrual cycle can affect asthma symptoms, and that's, so it's important to kind of gauge. And actually, if we are able to empower our patients by education, then they'll be able to see what their potential triggers are like. We have apps and digital devices now that tell us how we can track our menstrual cycles. So the patients might be able to then see how that might influence their asthma symptoms and be able to follow their asthma management plans to help subside that symptom burden.
Excellent.
I mean, it's a potential thing to think about, really. So for our patients and for our clinicians.
Yeah, I think, again, just when you were both speaking there, I was just thinking about how applicable that is, actually, probably not just in respiratory health, but across diseases. Mm. Is that actually for women, maybe we should be asking more about, you know, does your hormone cycle affect things? What, you know, are things changing? Are you coming close to the menopause? Is there a family history of early menopause? Because actually, I think when you do ask for lots of different conditions, women will often say, actually, it does make a difference. It's not something I would ever have mentioned. Yep. Or no one's asked, but it probably does. And that, I guess that makes sense from a biological perspective.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I would say, definitely say, if there's any patient listeners, of course, to this, that if you ask about your own cycle and you're not sure, ask your clinician too, right? They may not know the answer, but at least you can work together to try and figure it out.
Absolutely. And also with maintenance and reliever therapy that's being prescribed, I think that would be a really good way of educating the patient, but also for them to recognize when they need maintenance, when they need reliever therapy. Yeah. If they know that this is going to be something that, for example, they experience during their menstrual cycle, they can then up their therapy during that time.
Yeah. So that ability to have a treatment that they can use to treat fluctuations is something else to think about as well, isn't it? That actually, if their control's quite good a lot of the time, but then with their period it's fairly awful, then that ability to respond to that is quite important, and giving them an inhaler they can use in that way is really important.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about working out what might be your triggers. And yeah. What this is allowing us to think about is there are some triggers you definitely know about potentially, like it might be there's a cat around or a dog or whatever. You've got a cold. These are triggers you know about, but actually there might be some triggers that had not been explored before, and these triggers might be related to your hormonal cycle.
Do we know anything about whether there are specific treatments for asthma and other lung diseases that women and men respond to differently? Is that something that's been looked at?
So that's a really good question, Fiona. So if I'm thinking about all the RCTs, the clinical trials, of course, often, and I don't know all the data, so forgive me if I'm kind of giving a general response here, but I'm not sure that gender is often in the clinical trial data set used as a covariate. I don't think it's ever all looked at as a subgroup analysis. But Chris, do you know, are there some data sets that show that clinical trial drugs work in women more than men?
Not in the conventional ones that are used in asthma, but there is DHEA, which is dihydroresterone, and it's a precursor of testosterone and estrogen in kind of the synthesis in the body. And this study looked at using that for a few weeks in women that were premenopausal, that had mild to moderate asthma, and they did find an improvement in FEV1. But that's been taken further.
So actually that would suggest that there is definitely testament to clinical trial approaches which do try and look at sex differences in responses of therapeutic targets. To your answer, Fiona, I think it just tells us that we haven't been doing it. And if we do it, potentially there might be some differences.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of fascinating to me that actually it's really interesting to talk about. And part of the reason I love science is when you start talking about this and you think, actually, we haven't really looked at that. That's not really been asked before. And then you think, actually, we've been treating men and women the same for this condition, and maybe we shouldn't be, and we don't really know if we should be or not. I think it's one of the great joys of the job, is just that bit of, oh, well, we don't know that. Okay, let's try and find out.
Yeah, I mean, recently I was, I think it was Chris that informed me, I was recently told that much of the kind of the mouse model work as an example, which is always how we try and work out answers. We look at murine models and then we look at human models, when we might even start off with kind of healthy control models first. But if we look at mouse models, which is where the majority of our basic understanding starts from potentially, many studies in mouse models are done on male mice. So we might not even have got the right answers anyway, just to start.
That's incredible. That's fascinating.
Yeah. So the more messages about saying that actually in, and we're talking about lung health here today. So the more messages we have about lung health and the importance of potentially sex differences, I think the more we kind of talk about it, there'll be some change influencing that later on, I think.
Amazing. I might just move on slightly and just have a little think about a sort of pregnancy, and probably more relevant to asthma than anything else, but obviously younger women can have many lung diseases. Do we know about the effects of pregnancy and obviously that kind of fairly significant hormone burden on asthma and other lung diseases? And will that have an influence on how we treat during that phase of life?
Chris, did you want to start this?
Yeah. So during pregnancy, as you will know, there is a surge in hormones, particularly I'm talking about so estrogen. And so what I've read about, personally, I haven't treated anyone with pregnancy and asthma, but what I've read about is that asthma can either get worse or get better, or it just stays the same. And so there is really mixed sort of evidence on that as to exactly what's happening during that period. And when I've looked at the studies that are looking at pregnancy and asthma, most of them are focused on compliance of medication during pregnancy rather than investigating the hormonal differences. So that's what I've noticed.
Yeah, and I would agree with what Chris has said. I mean, in clinical practice, and I'm sure Fiona, your experience as well as a primary care physician, is that some people do okay, some people get worse, and some people might even get better. So that just says to us that there are some endotypes that just need a little bit more of an understanding. I don't know what your experiences has been on that in clinical practice and primary care.
Yeah, I mean, I would very much echo that. As you say, it is fascinating that some people just, it's like nothing's happened. They're exactly the same as they always have been, and some people it's almost like the other thing that women will often talk about in pregnancy is migraines, and it's very similar. Sometimes they completely go away, sometimes they get a whole lot worse, and it's very similar. And I think I always find it quite interesting that, again, you know, we talk about asthma, but the phenotype, the endotype is really important. And we don't always know what that is, but we recognize that when women get pregnant, it's clear that there must be a difference there because they don't all respond in the same way. And I guess the other thing about that, just to be clear about, is that we know, as far as we know, and I think I'm right in saying that controlling asthma well during pregnancy is the best thing that we can do, because having asthma that's not very well controlled is not great for mum or for right. or for baby.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
And so I might just move on again just to think a little bit more about the menopause. And obviously much of this is work that's very much in its infancy and just starting to kind of appear on the radar. But are there things around menopause that we should be thinking about? Do we know much about? I guess we probably don't know, like pregnancy, does it a third get worse and a third get better and a third stay the same? Do we have those numbers? But what are the things that we should maybe be thinking about as clinicians in sort of lung health round about the menopause, so not just specifically asthma, but thinking a bit more broadly? Chris, will I come to you first?
So again, I'll just go back to, I guess, the fact that we're just so early in this, understanding this. So, you know, a lot of what I'm saying is mostly based on research rather than actual clinical practice, what's being done. I mean, during clinical practice, women are not asked about their menopausal status during a COPD consultation or an asthma consultation. So it's really difficult then to know how exactly that is impacting them. Sometimes they might not even think it's impacting them. But, you know, I think asking about it again to try and help the patient realize how they can then understand their own triggers and see how exactly that is impacting them is really important, because then they would be able to recognize and think, for example, during menopause, what's given to patients is hormone replacement therapy or offered to patients. And so that's also a transitional period for them. And so if they recognize either their asthma or COPD or any lung disease has got worse or better during that time, that's then for them to understand how exactly that can be managed, them and their clinician. That's what I would add.
Great, thanks, Chris. Mona, did you have anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, I'm starting to notice that there's a group of women that are coming into my clinic whose symptom burden is extremely high, despite maximal medical optimization, despite really good adherence to treatment, you know, and I'm scratching my head because they're not conforming to the way I expect things to be. And now I'm asking the question, because the patient cohort I see are, you know, often in their mid-50s, as an example, and they will tell me things have been getting worse the last 18 months. And I'm starting to just think much more about, okay, can you tell me, have you gone through the menopause? And it is an interesting observation. And so this is really a bulk of the work that Chris is hopefully going to look at to see if there have we uncovered a new endotype of lung disease.
Yeah. It's absolutely fascinating. And just thinking about, I mean, I guess one of the big themes here is that we're just so early in the process here. For both of you, what are the questions, the kind of two or three big questions you'd like to see answered in the next 10, 15, 20 years in terms of women and lung health? Chris, I'm going to come to you first. Sorry, that's quite a big question. Apologies.
Okay. So I guess one of the big, in research, I think one of the big questions would be just to understand how hormonal fluctuations impact asthma or COPD or any lung disease, and try and focus in on, I guess, standardizing the way we look at things. So, you know, if they're enrolling participants that have had hormone replacement therapy, how much or what's the dose or what route has been used is really important for us to be able to understand some of these differences that we're seeing in research. So just to really understand and get a sort of a better, clearer idea from the clinical studies of what exactly the hormones are doing or adding to or subtracting from the conditions. So that would be a really big thing that I'd like to see.
Excellent. Thanks, Chris. Mona, can I come to you with that one?
Yeah. So again, only recently I realized that the human lung has estrogen receptors lining it.
Wow.
So my big question in the next 5-10 years is why?
Yeah.
And therefore, what happens to women whose hormonal changes are leading to expression on this receptor in the lung?
Yeah,
that's the big question I'd like us to see. And then, of course, well, we've got therapies for. Yeah. So are we thinking about the therapies in the wrong way? Should we be treating them in a different way earlier or whatever?
Yeah.
They're probably the two big questions, I think, for me in the next 5 to 10 years.
Amazing. Well, I'm going to draw us to a close in a little moment, but I just wanted to ask if you've got any final thoughts or things that you want to convey to our listeners. Chris, I'll come to you first.
I guess I would like to challenge the listeners or ask them to ask about hormones when they're seeing patients, and to notice that within their clinical practice, and to be able to sort of note down some of the differences and work with patients to be able to understand how hormones might be able to impact their condition, if it is at all. Yeah.
Excellent. Thanks, Chris. Mona, anything that you want to add?
Yeah, I probably want to add that it's great to have conversations like this about it. I know Asthma and Lung UK have been very much championing trying to understand the effect of sex hormones on lung diseases, and specifically looking at asthma. And of course, we've got a 10-year strategy about improving women's health directly from the Department of Health and Social Sciences. So I think we've got opportunities. And so all of us putting heads together is going to be key, I think.
Wonderful. Thank you both so much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure. I think it's just absolutely fascinating to hear how early in this process we are, and really exciting to think about the next 10 or 15 years and how we might be doing things differently. Thank you both so much for your time. As I say, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks very much.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. If you know somebody that may be interested in this podcast that is yet to become a member of PCRS, please direct them to the PCRS website and take the first step to inspiring more respiratory leaders.